We're in Song of Songs. I'm going to do some review of this. And there's basically one way of looking at this is there's 23 potential poems. And as we go through this, you do have to be thinking. It's a poem. It's tough sometimes to unravel. And it can go all the way to the spectrum of an allegory talking about Christ and His church, which I disagree with. That doesn't mean I'm right. I'm not going to go that way. I don't think we need a poem about Jesus and the church in the Old Testament written in 1000 B.C. But go ahead. You can go there if you want to. All the way to the place that this is talking about a song about Solomon falling in love with a girl, and he's bringing her into the harem, and it's all about Solomon and a young woman who they're infatuated with each other. And so it's a song about Solomon's love affair. And I have a heart. That's okay. I mean, the way I teach this may not be right. And the telltale sign is going to be as we're going through this, if I get halfway through the book and all of a sudden my way I'm teaching it doesn't make sense anymore. You understand? It's like, okay, then I got to go back and figure it out again. So I don't think it's an allegory about Christ and the church. I don't think it's a song about Solomon's love affair. I think it's a song for Solomon. I think Solomon had this in his courts. But I'm going to push it this way, that it's an anthology. It's a collection of songs. It's a variety. In fact, it's hard to even find a storyline through here, potentially. Maybe you can, but I think you're really pushing it, trying to find the themes jump all over the map, except the fact that there's a girl, there's a boy, they're talking about love, they're attracted to each other, and they're going through a series of songs, lyrics about love, about their relationship. It may not even be that it's the same boy and girl, although it may be. Some people have tried to teach it as a wedding song, that historically, and this is true, that even in the culture today, in the Eastern world, from what I've read, I have no experience there, but that at the wedding, the girl, the woman, the bride sings a song that glorifies the man she's marrying and how great he is. The man then turns and sings a song, kind of like us exchanging vows or having wedding ring, the ring exchange. You say certain things. It's the way we do it. They would sing to each other. So this is a wedding song that they would sing to each other at the wedding feast. And so you can, you know, I don't know how that works out, but then it's all about a wedding. Now the problem's going to come is when they start talking about love, if this is about a wedding that's going to end in a wedding, then you've got some problems, or I've got some problems, because there's some heavy sexual content, apparently, early in the book, even as we start the book, which it's like we should be waiting for the wedding night for this conversation. And they're like jumping into it, either illicit, immoral, inappropriate, or they're either already married, they're not even thinking about marriage, they're thinking more about the attraction. And I guess I'm not going to let this book become immoral. I don't think we're going to be promoting immorality in the book. But I do not think this book is about marriage and trying to teach morality. I think this book is trying to express the innate nature of the attraction of a woman to a man and a man to a woman. And again, that's how I'm kind of going at it. And again, I may need to be corrected as I go through this, but I'm not going to try to find a storyline. I'm not going to try and find Christ in this. I'm not going to try and find Solomon having a wedding feast or something. I think this is the Song of Songs. It's the title means the best song. This is the best expression of what people in all cultures sing about, and that is a love relationship between a man and a woman. I mean, it's not country music sings about it. Rap sings about it, kind of, I guess. Rock and roll sings about it. I'll go way back. Every type of music will express some kind of, have some expression about love. So this is, I think, a collection of songs, of lyrics, about that attraction between a man and a woman. And when we get into a sexual scene, I'm going to assume they're married. I'm going to assume it's not immoral. It's not something inappropriate. It's something that is natural. They're being drawn towards each other. So I don't even feel that the question is, are they married or are they not married, is really pertinent to this. The issue is not, are they married or are they having illicit sex? The question or the point is, they are celebrating their attraction to each other. And again, what can be more refreshing than this book in our culture today, that a man and a woman, a boy and a girl, a couple teenage kids are attracted sexually to each other? It's like, yay! And again, it's like, in my world, that's normal. It's like, okay, welcome back to reality. And again, now agreed, we're going to have boundaries. We're going to have marriage. We're going to have some kind of social expectations on that. Christ has a plan for individuals. He's got a plan for marriage. He's got a plan for families. He's got a plan for nations. So all of that will come into play. But what we're looking at in this book is, this is normal, son, that you'll be attracted to this girl. And this girl, it's normal that you're looking at all the boys and you're finding one that you're interested in. And it's not just because you think he's cute. There's something going on bigger than that. And so with that, again, that's how I'm approaching it. And so that's not right necessarily. That's the way I can handle this. I am not going to be able to teach this, that this is Christ in the church, because it's going to get too allegorical, and you just are making stuff up. You're just trying to take these verses and just somehow tie them into the New Testament reality that Christ died for the church, and it's like, it makes no sense. We don't even need it because you just read the New Testament. But again, you got to decide. Now, one way of looking at it is there's 23 poems in this book, and I've got 11 of them written here. One of the problems as we go, not problems, one of the challenges is, how do these read into each other? And sometimes they just don't. There's just no connection. Last week we talked, and we'll read through it real quickly. Last week they talked about being out in the shepherd's field. They talked about being in the woods, the lilies, the trees, the flowers. They talked about being in a house that beams were cedar. Tonight, if I hurry, and I got to get here, because otherwise we won't make any progress, they're going to be on seeking part number two in chapter 3, verse 1 through 5. And now they're in the city, they're in the streets at night. So you go from being in a field with the shepherds to being in a valley with trees and a forest to being in the streets at night. And something really strange is going to happen here is, again, just jumping ahead where I want to get tonight, at least this is kind of where we start new material here, is the girl is going to wake up in bed. And she's just waking up, and she reaches for her boy, her man. Again, I assume he's her husband, because we're not teaching immorality. But if that's the case, she's having a dream; it's not real, or she's sleeping with this guy, and she expects him to be there. When he's not there, where's he at? Well, if you're not married, honey, and you've never had a man in your bed, there's no. Why are you asking the question? I can't find him. It's like the very fact that she's going to go off and look for him because he's not in bed gives the impression she's not a virgin, you know? Gives the impression that she's used to having this guy in bed with her every night, at least, you know, since they've gotten married or they've, you know, whatever. And so that's going to be a challenge here, even approaching that, because some are, you know, because here's how it's going to go. She's going to reach over, can't find her husband or the man that she's supposed to be in bed with, that she's in love with. See, it's almost like you hate to use the word husband and wife because it kind of takes away from that. Again, and I have a great relationship with my wife, but it kind of takes away from that romance. It's like, I've got to go with Tony because she's my wife. It's like, yeah, I don't really like to call her my wife sometimes. I like to call her my friend. I like to call her my bride. I like to call her something besides wife, because wife has the impression of I'm stuck with her. You know, again, and then I mean, I don't feel that way, and nothing wrong with having a wife, but I like to keep it kind of in that more, I'm still making some choices and I choose you again, you know, type of attitude, if you understand what I'm saying. So I feel that kind of is happening in this book. Instead of having husband and wife and the wife reach over for her husband, where is he at? I tell you what, I can't trust that man. Why is he not in bed? Goes off, or you get back in bed. It's like, where's my lover at? My lover's not here. It's like, well, is she sleeping around? Just because you're sleeping with your lover doesn't mean you're sleeping around. You might be sleeping with your spouse. It's like, well, how's that happen? Oh my gosh, you know, it's like, it's normal to be in love with your spouse, friends, you know. Anyway, what's going to be strange here is she's going to reach over and then she's going to go off and begin looking for him while going through the city streets of Jerusalem, looking at night for this man, her lover. She can't find him and she's worried. And she ends up finding the guards, which is not bad in our chapter tonight because the guards are going to say, we don't know, but then she's instantly going to find the man. When you get to chapter 5, she's going to go off and searching for him again, and this time the guards are going to find her, but they're going to beat her up and rip her clothes off. It's kind of like, we're not ready for that chapter yet, but it's like, whoa, what's this about? This is definitely not something you're going to want to sing at a wedding feast. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it sounds more like rap music now. But nonetheless, hopefully you don't listen to rap. And I know it's a cheap shot at rap. I'm sorry for all the rap fans out there. And then another I want to really get here tonight is when she finds him, she takes him. Where else do you take your lover when you find him in the streets of Jerusalem? Back to her mother's house, to her mother's bed. It's like there's a lot of romantic places in the world, but my mother-in-law's bedroom with what? It's like it doesn't even make sense. And so, but yet, we got to step back. It does make sense because remember, when Isaac met Rebekah, where did he take her? It says right in Genesis. He took her to his mother's tent. And that's where they consummated their marriage. It's like, and in Egyptian and this the Chaldean poetry that matches this, it's not uncommon for the man to end up with his wife or his woman, his girl, in her mother's bedchamber. It's a place of security. It's a place of generational, you know, productivity. It was a romantic thing, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, so we got to kind of be careful. And I got to be careful when I see an image, it's like, that's strange. Exactly. There's a lot of strange things in our culture right now that these people wouldn't understand. And you know this. It's like, Bruce is now Caitlin. It's like, whoa, how can you imagine David and Solomon reading some of our poetry? It's like, what kind of people are these? Well, we're the Canaanites. We're not going to be here much longer, so don't have to worry about us. Okay. So here we go. These are 11 poems, and I'll read through these very quickly. It's going to be The Woman's Pursuit. And this is another interesting thing. This is not going away. The woman is not your typical biblical woman passively waiting for the man to take action. She is pursuing him from the get-go. And throughout the book, throughout the poem, the woman is aggressive, a lot more aggressive than we would think of a good Christian girl. She knows what she wants. She knows she's got desires, and she's actively pursuing them. So it begins with this. She describes herself as dark, remember, meaning that's bad because it looks like I've been working, but yet I'm beautiful. Invitation is going to have an invitation, chapter 1. And see, these kind of switch. We try to read them together, but they're even broken apart in your Bible text as we try and put this together. She describes herself. Then there's an invitation. Then the guy calls her a beautiful mare, which is a very positive thing, highly decorated. Talking about, now we move into fragrances, where she spreads her perfume, which kind of gives the impression she makes her presence known. She's aroused, and she's like drawing him in. It's another invitation. Then they're outdoors. Then there's that comparison that she calls herself a lily, just the dandelion among all the flowers. He says, you're more than, she says, you're a lily among the thorns. He says, you may not think much of yourself, but can I look at all the other women? You're the only one that even looks attractive. Everyone else looks like thorns. And then she calls that her boy, her man, her husband, is an apple tree among all the trees. There's all kinds of trees, but you're the one that's got apples on it. So again, they both are comparing themselves there. And this is where we begin tonight. Springtime. We're going to have, beginning of chapter 2, verses 8 through 17, it's going to be springtime. And springtime, I think we're safe to assume, is that time where people come out from being in winter, being locked up, being separated from other people, and the trees are budding, the rain has gone away, in our case, the snow has melted. It's that time where you start re-engaging with people. You start making those hookups. And it's a time where she's excited, he's excited, and they're looking for each other. Then we move in. Right away, we go from the springtime discussion here about how everything's perfect. She's seeking for him in the streets. And then we go to this royal wedding, which I think a lot of times throws everybody off. Because now, all of a sudden, we're describing Solomon's wedding. And interesting about Solomon's wedding, the one who puts the crown on Solomon's head at his wedding is his mom. So once again, the mom is involved in this in a way that's kind of unusual, at least for our culture. And then the man's going to... So anyway, I'm going to read through this, and then right in here, chapter 2, verse 8 through 17, we're going to hit springtime. Here we go. I'm going to read through what we did last week. Chapter 1, verse 1. Solomon's Song of Song, or Song of Songs for Solomon. Some people would say Solomon wrote it. Let him, this is the woman speaking, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is more delightful than wine. Pleasing is the fragrance of your perfumes. Your name is like perfume poured out. No wonder the maidens love you. Take me away with you. Let us hurry. Let the king bring me into his chambers. So right away, fairly aggressive for a woman's part in a biblical story that involves love. Again, in explaining this, the love refers to caresses. The kissing is the beginning point. It's like intoxicating, like wine. You start kissing, it's going to draw you in and get emotions, get arousal started. You're going to become drunk with this wine. That's going to lead to caressing. Pleasing is the fragrance of your perfume. They're together. They're experiencing each other. A lot of times fragrance or perfumes is your senses are being aroused because of the other person, and you're experiencing the other person at some level. She says the other maidens are also impressed with you. She says, let me take me away with you. She's inviting him to take her away. Go, and where does she want to go with him? She wants to go to his chamber. She wants to go into the bedroom with him. Again, the king, again, if you're going with this, that this is Solomon, there you go. I think it's going to fall apart on you if you try and make this man Solomon. Because, I mean, my number one argument against that, again, is Solomon's got how many concubines and how many wives? You know, 700 and 900. Or 900 concubines, 700 wives. 300 wives? Okay, is that what it is? Okay, and 700 concubines? Okay. And it's like, how can he even have a love affair like this? I mean, that's my point. Now, that's not the end of the argument, but I'm not even interested in calling it Solomon. It may be. Friends, then it says something in my Bible that says, we rejoice and delight in you. We praise your love more than wine. In other words, they're encouraging her, saying, yes, this is exciting. They're encouraging this desire that she got. They're saying, this is normal. This is good. Go for it, girl. Go for it. Okay, now, beginning in verse... And right there, how right they are to adore you. This is the next verse right here, next poem. Dark am I, yet lovely, O daughters of Jerusalem. Now, you know, she's singing or talking to a group of girls. Dark like the tents of Kedar, like the tent curtains of Solomon. Again, the comparison there is she's dark like the Bedouin tents, but yet she's beautiful like Solomon's highly ornate, decorated curtains. So, do not stare at me because I am dark, because I am darkened by the sun. My mother's sons were angry with me and made me take care of the vineyard of the vineyards. Again, there's some questions here. Why are they angry with her? Are they just making her work, not letting her take care of herself? Doesn't have to be a disciplinary action here, just that they're angry with her in the sense that you can't go, well, she says, my own vineyard I have neglected, and there's really no doubt about this. Her vineyard is her body or her own person, where she's going to put perfume. She's going to take care of her skin. She's going to fix her hair. She's going to make sure her eyes look good. She's going to take care because she's going to invite this guy into her vineyard. I don't want to be out taking care of my brother's, you know, plants in the fields out there. I want to be taking care of this vineyard for this guy I'm trying to meet or that I'm in love with. So my mother's sons rang with me and made me take care of the vineyards outside in the sun. My own vineyard I have neglected, and thus I don't look as good as I want to. Verse 7, tell me you whom I love, where you graze your flock. And this is one of many of, we may call them playful exchanges, where she's wanting to follow him and be with him, and he's like playing hide and seek. It's going to come up again later tonight, kind of a little game that maybe is being played. We'll talk about it. But anyway, she says, where are you at? I want to hook up with you again at noon, at midday, when the sheep are all laying down and sleep. They've grazed in the morning. They're going to graze later in the afternoon and in the evening. During the hot part of the day, they're going to lay down somewhere in the cool of the grass in the shade and sleep. So there's not much for the shepherd to do. So, hey, I want to catch up with you around noon. Just like we want to catch up with someone on Friday night or Saturday night so we can go out with people. That she wants to catch up with him at noon, midday, while the sheep are asleep and you're just sitting there playing video games in your tent. How about if I show up and give you something else to do? Okay, Why should I be like the veiled women beside the flocks of your friends? In other words, tell me so I can come straight to your tent instead of having to put a veil on and go out and kind of roam around and try and find you. Now her friends, the women, say, if you do not know, most beautiful of women, follow the tracks of the sheep and graze your young goats by the tents of the shepherds. Hey, here's a little, this is a girl sitting around talking, and she said, oh, I'm trying to do this. Well, here's what you can do. You can take your goats and just kind of follow all the shepherds out and graze your, and while you're grazing your goats, you can kind of be checking the different scene where everybody's at, and by midday, you should have him located. And they're trying to help her out, kind of texting each other. Here's what you can do, and they're giving each other advice. The lover, the boy, he says, I liken my darling to a mare, a harness to one of chariots, the chariots of Pharaoh. Again, a horse, but highly decorated. I mean, she's beautifully, highly decorated. Your cheeks are beautiful with earrings. Your neck with strings of jewels will make you earrings of gold studded with silver. Meaning you look as good as Pharaoh's horses. And there's only one thing I could add to you, and that is some more gold and silver. I mean, not just a little friendship bracelet or a little, you know, something I made in shop class. The only thing I can give you is something that's gold and silver to accommodate your beauty. While the king was at his, now we switch poems. Now in verse 12 right here, now we're into the fragrances. See, we've gone from all the way through these things. Now, if you're trying to tie these together and find a storyline, you maybe can, but it's shifting so fast. It's like a collection of the best poetry about love. Maybe. Verse 12. While the king was at his table, and then this could be Solomon again, if you're going with that, or just the man that she wanted to meet out in the field, the man that she was trying to look good for. Now she says, while the king was at his table, my perfume spread its fragrance. In other words, he was at the table in the house, and I walked in the room and let him know I was here. Meaning her fragrance filled the room. My lover's, now again, that spread her fragrance, meaning she shared her fragrance or shared her person with him, but also gives the impression that she herself is aroused and sending off signals. It's like, hey, look at me. Now she's like, this is pretty, you listen to this. My lover's a sachet of myrrh resting between my breasts. My lover is to me a cluster of henna blossoms from the vineyards of En-Gedi. In other words, she has a fragrance for him that arouses him. He also has a fragrance, and she says, I'm going to wear him between my breasts so I can smell him like I smell the perfume that I would wear around my neck. Verse 15. Now they're outdoors. How beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful. Your eyes are like doves, the man says, that calm, beautiful, peaceful, tranquil. How handsome you are, my lover, and how charming. And our bed is verdant. Now, this is typical right here of one of those wedding songs where the bride sings to the groom and the groom sings to the bride. So this would match. That's why that's not a bad idea, but can you make it work throughout the whole song? Or the whole song. But she sings to him, says something nice to him. He sings to her about something. So, again, this may come from a wedding song, but that doesn't make the whole thing a wedding song. Anyway, he prays her, calls her eyes like doves. She says, how handsome you are, my lover. Oh, how charming, and our bed is verdant. That means lush or luxurious. And once again, she's identifying for the second time the bed. I don't think she's immoral. I don't think she's doing something wrong. I think this is an appropriate relationship. We're just not focusing on, yes, but are they married? Are they married? Did they act? It's like that's not the question. The question is they're celebrating the love and the attraction they have for each other, and she's looking at the bed. And she's wanting him on her chest so she can be with him and smell him. Verse 17, the beams of our house are cedars, our rafters are firs. Now, this verse, I like to put this because the bed is there. He's in the house. I like to think that she's describing their house. If you go ahead and put this in, some other people interpret this, that they're still outdoors. They've gone into the woods, and they're surrounded by trees, and they're playing house. They're really not in a house. They're now out in the woods, and instead of our bed is right here. Our beams of our house looks like they're cedar trees. I mean, you know what I'm saying? They're in the woods, and they're describing this is our home. So they really don't have a home. They're describing their current setting as their home. And you can do that. I like to think of that they're, you know, in their house. But again, like I said, I don't have this completely all figured out. Now, chapter 2, verse 1, we do understand what she's saying here. I am a rose. of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. And again, like I said last week, a rose sounds very nice. We give them away for, you know, Valentine's Day, and they're like $40 a piece. And then the next week, they're $1 a piece. But this is nothing special. This is just a daffodil, something that just grows in the valley. When the spring comes out, she says, I'm a common flower. I'm just a lily in the valley. Like a lily among thorns, he says, is my darling among the maidens. He says, you may just be a dandelion, but all else is out there is just thorns. So he compliments her. He's got higher praise for her than she does of herself. Well, she returns the favor to him. Like an apple tree among the trees of the forest is my lover among the young men. There's a lot of trees out here, but you're the only one that I see that's got any apples on. You're the only one that's got any kind of fruit that I'm interested in. And so that's a compliment to her. I delight to sit in his shade, and his fruit is sweet to my taste. So when I'm going after this guy, I'm very pleased with what I get from him. He has taken me to the banquet hall, and that means the wine house. And his banner over me is love. Again, we talked about that word a little bit last week. It can be translated intention. We've gone to the wine house. We start off with kissing and embracing, being intoxicated. You know, intoxicating, the kissing, being intoxicated, and giving you this emotional rush towards another thing. Now they're actually in the wine house. They're not just having a glass of wine. They are in the wine house. I mean, so they're, well, you'd assume they're having more than one glass of wine. And his intention or his banner over me is love, or more caressing. Strengthen me with raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am faint with love. A typical theme in love poetry is of being lovesick. And the only way that she can be strengthened and recover from lovesickness is to have this desire quenched or satisfied. It looks like they're embracing each other right here. And I'm going to leave it like this as I read it in verse 6. I think they are in the bed. I think they have experienced a sexual encounter. I don't think it's inappropriate, but I think it's indeed something they were pursuing. His left arm is under my head. His right arm embraces me. They have now been together. Again, maybe not the first time. This is her lover. She knows what she woke. She began saying, I want the king to take me to his bedchambers. And she's not like an immoral, loose woman. It's like, I've been there before. This is where I want to go. And now here's your warning. Verse 7, daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you by the gazelles and by the does of the field. And you can see the gazelles and the does. They could be very beautiful. They could be elegant. They could be robust. They could be fruitful. They could be... There's some kind of connection there that these are... Like if you want to, you know, like in our culture, again, this is not a necessarily a good illustration, but it's like hearts and cupids. You know, if someone's in love, they got little hearts around them in cartoons or TV shows or something, and cupids. You know, by the hearts and the cupids, I charge you. And so this is a little more serious than that illustration, but I think this in their culture, the gazelles and the